today is Open Phones Day. So, Paolo, what has been on your mind? Is there anything from a great revelation that's been kind of occupying your time or your mind or anything like that?
Well, not really, and I'm sorry to say that, but Christmas time is the whole month of December is really interesting for me because it starts with Thanksgiving, and then a week later is Mei Li, my daughter's birthday, and then a week after that is Nathan, my son's birthday, and then a week after that is my daughter Jean's anniversary, and then a week after that is Christmas, and
wow.
After that is New Year's, so I pretty much spend the whole month of December engaged in wonderful and fun family activities, and one of my greatest joys in life is being with my family and my children and their spouses and my grandchildren, and we have just a blast together. We get together and we laugh and we play games and we just have the best time.
I can testify to that because I definitely was a part of that. I was just thinking that Paul, that your family is probably the most healthy, functional family that I know.
Well, and we've been through a lot together. As you probably know, my first husband died when my children were little. My daughter was 7 and my son was 4. And a year later, I married again to the most wonderful man who has been our dad in every way. And, it's never easy making a step family functional and work well. You know, it's hard for the step parent. It's hard for the children. It was easier in some ways because there wasn't another family somewhere else pulling at them, but it had its challenges, but it's been wonderful and rewarding. And one of the things that I tell people when I lecture about the Urantia book, and it's something that always stays with me, is the Urantia Moda. From page, I think in the old book, it's page 557. And there are these wonderful distillations of, it's not real Urantia Moda, as we know, it's the human equivalent of the Urantia Moda. And one of them is, effort does not always produce joy, but there is no happiness without intelligent effort. And I point out to people, as you look back over your life, and I tell them, this book is not easy to read, and it's not easy to understand. It's going to make you work. It's going to make you really think and struggle with the concepts and work with it. But in the end, it's worth the effort. It's worth every bit of effort it takes to read it. And I often point out that I have friends who have PhDs that will say, I read this whole book. Like, they're as proud of that as they are the fact that they got their PhD, And it's true. It's like that. It's a lifelong study. And but I tell people, you look at the things you've done in your life. Were they easy? The things that give you the most joy and the most satisfaction and the most pride in accomplishment, were they easy to do? Was it easy to get a degree? Was it easy to be married for 30 years, 35 years? Was it easy to raise children through their tempestuous teens to adulthood? None of these things are easy. They take a great deal of effort. But
you know what's interesting about that, though, Paola? I have to qualify what you're saying a little bit, though, because to me, you're right. It takes a lot of work to understand the Urantia book. But it's even the effort itself is enjoyable to me. It's something that I really – in fact, in a way, it feels effortless only in the sense that – because I guess when I think of effort, I think of things – that I have to try to do even though I don't really want to do it, when it comes to studying the Urantia book or when it comes to doing things I really love to do like radio or whatever, in some ways it's difficult, yes, in the sense that it's been difficult for me to find a stable career, but it has been easy in the sense that when I'm really doing what I love to do, it just flows. So, it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of six of one, half dozen of the other for me.
Well, you know what, Andre, I've thought about this quite a bit. And, anything that's challenging takes effort at first, and maybe for a good long while. But it gets easier. That's the point. It gets easier, and it gets more and more enjoyable as you master it and as you become comfortable with it. And I think this is why those beings who have lived for so long, you know, the Urantia book tells us they've learned to feast on uncertainty and fatten on disappointment. And what is that other great quote? It says, challenges will spur you on, right?
Right.
And I think, okay, so if you've lived that long and you've gotten so good, you've mastered the art of living, you've learned how to do so many things well, you can see why a challenge would spur you on, right?
But I guess what I'm saying is there are some things I've always been comfortable with. I mean, broadcasting is a good example. You know, there was never a time when I said, oh, man, this is hard. And I'm not trying to brag to the listeners or gloat. I'm just telling you how much I love it. It's something that I enjoy doing so much that it never felt like work to me. And even studying the Urantia book, I mean, even though it's work, it doesn't feel like work to me. You know, it feels like it's something I enjoy doing because I'm passionate about it.
Yes, of course. And I guess what I'm referring to, and maybe some people are like that with parenthood, just for example, you know. But I think that most people don't realize how challenging parenthood is going to be until they become a parent. I mean, there's nothing you could do in life that could prepare you for that. Until it happens to you, you just wouldn't know. And then when it does happen to you, you dig down deep for strength you didn't know you had. And you are challenged daily to come up with strength that you didn't know you had. It's almost like every single day.
Yeah.
It's something new. And so, you know, and when you're a new mom, I'll just give you an example. I've never been a new father, obviously, but I have been a new mother. You get sleep deprived. I mean, you go through this whole, you know, but then when you have your second child, you know what to expect, see?
Mm-hmm.
And so now it isn't so challenging. And I guess that's my point, that, you know, the reward of effort is the satisfaction of accomplishment and experience and certainty. That I can do this, I know I can do this, I've done it before. And on the other side of that is the discovery, or also the joy of being challenged again with something you've not done, and now you get to, you know, exert that great effort and achieve something. And the beauty of all of that is you discover that anything's possible.
Yeah,
and
I guess it's interesting, one of the things that I... Like about a year ago, Paul, I was taking a life coaching training class, and I decided not to finish the course. But when I was taking the class, one of the things that the coach that was training me had me do was she had me come up with a thing called a glory code. And a glory code, we had two things: we had a survival code and a glory code. A survival code is sort of just your coping mechanisms that you learned as a child to survive, and your glory code is in her terminology, was it's what the person God meant you to be. But it was interesting because in my glory code, the code, what I came up with is that I was going to live an effortless life, and I can't remember the rest of it. But you know, the fact is that life really isn't effortless. And even when I'm doing my broadcast, it's not effortless. But it feels effortless to me at times. And I think that when I think of the things I'm most passionate about, the things I most enjoy, they often feel effortless, even though the fact is they really do take a lot of effort. Now, parenthood is a whole different story, and I'm not qualified to speak to it, except to say that I'm certainly not going to kid myself and think that it's going to feel effortless.
Well, good for you. Because but I guess my whole point in saying this is that the things that are the hardest to do, I mean, it goes back to that great Moda equivalent. The things that, you know, effort doesn't always produce joy, but there is no happiness without intelligent effort.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is so key to understanding human happiness. If you are challenged to achieve something that seems difficult, even impossible at times, and you do it, you grow. You grow in strength, and you grow in ability, and you grow in understanding, and you grow in every way. And that kind of growth makes you happy because it gives you satisfaction. And it's like, you know, the Urantia book calls it the satisfactions of living. And certainly achievement and effort are one of the greatest satisfactions of living. So, and, you know, I read today, I don't know if you saw it, I think it was today, it was the quote of the day from truthbook.com, and it's, you know, I just want to remind our listeners again, if you don't get the quote of the day from truthbook.com, it's a free subscription. It's absolutely beautiful. It comes to your email every day with a beautiful image, a stunning image, and a quote. And, you know, it just kind of sets the day. And I did these with Mo. We're going to have our interview, the third part of our interview with Mo, mid-show today. And Mo and I worked on Truthbook, and Larry Watkins on our board, he works on Truthbook. He currently works on Truthbook, and the quote of the day, for many years we've done this. And there's, just to give you an idea, there's 6 years' worth of daily quotes in the quote database. You can go and search the database, and you can search it, for instance, on happiness. You can see all the quotes on happiness, on faith, on truth. But it's a free subscription. You can unsubscribe at any time you like, but most people don't unsubscribe because it's just such a beautiful, inspirational thing. And today I have to read this because the quote today was splendid. It said, the religion of the spirit, and we've talked a lot about this religion of Jesus and being the religion of the spirit versus the religions of authority, which tell you what to think, whereas the religion of the Spirit teaches you how to think. And the title of the quote is The Religion of the Spirit. And Andre, you would like this too. I mean, I don't know if your computer would let you do this, but you can listen to the quotes. There's a button you can click
on. No, actually, I can't do that on my computer.
Okay, so it says, here was today's quote, and I just thought it was so beautiful and so apropos. It says, The religion of the spirit means effort, comma, struggle, comma, conflict, comma, faith, comma, determination, comma, love, comma, loyalty, comma, and progress. So the religion of the spirit means effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress.
You know, I think it's so, this is where I really have to agree with you, Paul, and I really have to agree with the book here, because I'm a witness to this. I mean, I've talked a little bit about this on the air, but I, you know, when I was younger, I was heavily involved with evangelical and fundamentalist Christianity, and there are times when it's so tempting to go back to that, because it's so tempting to just, have all these answers and have all this security, and, you know, and not to have to be forced to think about things, you know, in beyond just a black and white fashion. And I really, and there are times that I'm tempted to just go back into the easy path, you know. But I think what makes it hard too is that I think a lot of people have this idea that if you're doing God's will, it's all going to be easy. And if it's too hard, then it must not be God's will, you know. Then you've got the other extreme where people say, well, if it's too easy, it can't be God's will. If it's God's will, it's got to be sacrifice, and it's got to be, you know, grueling, you know. But anyway, the point is that, you know, when I have these struggles, and because I sometimes have, you know, and not so much anymore, but for a long time I had battles against doubt. And, you know, of course, Jesus tells us that the believer's only battle is a battle against doubt. And I've had battles against doubt, and I've had battles against fear, and you know, and I had to really step back and detach from my emotions and say, okay, what's keeping me from really wholeheartedly embracing this revelation? And it was fear. That's what was keeping me, you know. But anyway, to make a long story short, my point is simply that I understand the inner conflict, the struggle they're talking about. It's really affirming to know that, you know what, that doesn't mean I'm on the wrong path. It means I'm on the right path, because that's part of the religion of the spirit.
Well, right. And I think that's what's so poignant about it. I think that a lot of people, you know, as we know, we believe that, you know, we struggle for this brief life and then we die and we go to heaven and we float on a cloud and walk on streets of gold and we never struggle again. It's absolutely not true. And not only do we not struggle, we put forth real effort and we experience conflict. That's huge. I have a lot of readers who call me and say, you know, if we're so spiritual, why are we having this conflict? If we were really spiritual, if we really understood the book, we wouldn't be having this conflict. I'm like, what?
Well, you know what I say to that? I say, you know, that actually the fact is because you care so deep. It's because people care so deeply about the ideas in the book, about the concepts. About, that's why these conflicts happen. If you didn't care, you would just float along.
Well, exactly. And if there were no conflict, you know, the Urantia book tells us that the only place where understanding is complete is on paradise.
Right.
And the only place where there is no need for conciliating commissions and courts and magistrates and all of this is on paradise. So all the way to paradise, which is a long, long way, we're going to experience conflict in one form or another. And it tells us we grow through conflict. And I think that's why the greatest lessons of altruism and patience are learned in the family. Because when you throw a bunch of people in close quarters, you're going to have conflict, and you've got to work through it because something is more important. It's the love of family. It's the love of your children and your friends or your community are more important than your conflicts. And so it isn't that you won't have conflict. It's that you have to learn to work through it.
And also, yeah, exactly. And working through it is so important because, and there's so many things that you said, Paul. And by the way, for those of us who want to call in, we have an open phone segment today. So our number is 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158.
And before you continue your thought, we have a caller. So
see, there you go.
Do you want to finish your thought and then I'll?
Oh no, no. Sure. Well, you know, the thing is, Paula, that not only do we grow through conflict, not only do, well, there's a couple things that come to my mind as you were speaking. Working through conflict is so important because, and resolving it, not just sweeping it under the rug, because it's kind of like I've heard people say, nothing's resolved until it's resolved. So sweeping something under the rug is not going to resolve it, and I think it's really important that, and when you work through a conflict, when to me the great thing about that is you learn to understand the other person, and when you learn to understand the other person understands you, and through that mutual understanding comes real forgiveness and real love, and I think that's one of the things the book says over and over, that we can't really love someone until we understand them. We can't really forgive until we understand. So understanding has to come first. And that's what I think is so important about conflict resolution. The other thing that I want to say is that this is where I think the Urantia book's paradigm is so different than the sort of biblical Christian paradigm. And that is that in the classical Christian paradigm, you know, the suffering and conflict are a bad thing, because they are a consequence of the fall of man, and you know the human beings fell from perfection, and fell, you know, because of Adam's sin. And yes, our planet is fallen because of the Lucifer rebellion. That's true. But even if we didn't have a fallen planet, we'd still have struggle. We'd still have conflict. Not only are those things inevitable, but they are good. They are necessary. The universe needs those things in order to be complete. Because if we didn't have time and space, if we didn't have evolution, if we didn't have then God would just be. God would not be able to liberate himself from how do they put it, from the fetters of, I can't remember the words that they use, but essentially the point is that the one limitation God has is that God had at one time is that God was not able to, because he was perfect, he was not able to directly experience pain and limitation. And, you know, the fact that he created time and space enables him to do those things.
Yeah, Chris Halverson does a great talk on that, but... about God and God's initial static, I think he calls it, of perfection. And,
yes.
And just,
yes.
No, it's only in relationship that you experience true joy, but also conflict. And not that God experiences conflict, but, you know, it was just very, he does a very interesting rap on that. We should have him on to discuss that. But let's take a call. 303, you're on Blog Talk.
Hi. This is Joan Evans.
Hi, Joan.
Hi, Joan.
thought I'd join you for a bit. You're talking about some things that are very meaningful to me, and
oh,
I thought I might share how much the teachings from the Urantia book have helped me through quite a number of difficult circumstances in my life. And I remember that when I was, maybe an early teenager, thinking that my life had gone along so smoothly and wondering if I'd be able to cope if I came up against something that was really difficult. Well, I did. And I was living overseas in West Africa, and there were several situations where it was so helpful to rely on these teachings when the going got tough. I remember one time when I had boiled several places on my face and under my arms, and it was miserable. And the house we were living in, we had to close the shutters because there wasn't screens on. We had to close the shutters at sundown to keep the mosquitoes out, and then it was, dark and dreary, and I thought, this. And there were political and difficulties at the hospital where we were working, and I thought, oh, boy. I'll probably look back on this situation in 5 years and think it was a good growth experience. But right now, it's pure hell. And it did turn out that way. It was a good learning experience. And then there was also the time when we lost a baby there at term. And so it was difficult getting through all that.
Joan, I know that you and your husband at the time, Richard, and your children, Crystalline and David, who David was born there, right?
Right.
You were medical missionaries. You and your husband were medical missionaries there. And that had to have been just, your daughter has shared with me many instances of how rewarding and how wonderful life in that village was, and how different life in that village was. But you're kind of touching on some of the challenges. Can you name something specific that, like an event where you really had an epiphany that just helped you overcome? Like you said, you lost a baby over there, and I know you had many challenges there. Anything specific come to mind that where you had an epiphany that was just like made all the difference?
Well, I think one of the big ones probably was when I really had to work through my feelings and what I'd learned from the Urantia teachings about forgiveness, because in the local we were going through some political difficulty because the church that supposedly sponsored the hospital was going to have to give it up and turn it over to the government ministry because of lack of funding. And so the people in the town were very resentful toward my husband because they thought that something was being taken away from them. And there was a lot of misunderstanding, and there was actual hatred toward us. I remember a man standing up in the church and saying all kinds of nasty things against Rick. Boy, I was so angry at him. Oh, I was really angry at him. Probably more so than if either something directed at yourself, but when it's directed
right
at a family member. And I remember praying about that a lot, especially the words, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do," made so much sense to me. I mean, it fit the situation perfectly. Well, about a month or two later, after I'd kind of simmered down and really had to do a lot of spiritual work and got a lot of spiritual help with the forgiveness issue, this man who had said these things in church came to the hospital and wanted to know if he could, what was it? He needed to use something of ours, our typewriter, in order to write a letter on behalf of the chief to the Ministry of Health. And I thought, boy, a couple of months ago, I wouldn't have wanted that man to cross my threshold, but now it's okay. And so that was a real learning experience, how meaningful those words are. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do.
And I think that, the reason I love that phrase, Joan, is because I've talked about this before, but the Urantia book has really given me a whole new perspective on forgiveness. And I think one of the reasons there's so much unforgiveness in the world is because people forget that most of the things that we do to hurt each other are not done intentionally. They're not done
mm-hmm.
maliciously. And one of the things I love about the book is how it redefines sin. Sin is deliberate disloyalty to deity. So most of the things that we do are not sinful. I think it's so important, I think, to be able to say to somebody, I know you didn't do that on purpose. I know you
mm-hmm.
didn't mean it. And it takes a lot. And I very rarely, I got to tell you, I very rarely hear people say that. But because I rarely hear people say it, I've decided I'm going to make a commitment as of today to make sure that when I work through a conflict with someone, since 9 times out of 10, the conflict is unintentional, I want to make a point of making sure that if I'm offended or hurt, that I tell someone, I know you didn't do it on purpose.
Well, and what was beautiful about this experience, too, was that after some time had passed and we were ready to come back to the States on furlough, and I wanted to tape some music. This man led a choral group called the Singing Band, and beautiful Ghanaian spiritual music. So I asked him if he would get the group together and sing so I could record it. Well, he was willing to do that. And so I had this lovely recording of this spiritual music from Ghana. And so, you know, the circle was completed, and that relationship, it never had been particularly close, but at least the relationship was restored. And,
I think that the point that you bring up, Joan, is so vitally important because, you know, Jesus told us that we should lay up our treasures in heaven. And I know I've said this before, but it always bears repeating that our treasures are what we get to take with us then, obviously. And we know that all of these things of this world are not things that we get to take with us, but we do get to take our relationships. And we do get to take our experiences. Those are an endowment for us. They're an eternal endowment. Nothing can take those away from us.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Relationships, then, you know, the Urantia book is very clear on the fact that relationships are an end in themselves. They are not a means to an end.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. People are not some disposable stepping stone that you use to get from point A to point B. Your relationships are an end in themselves, each one a unique gift in your life. And when you can take a relationship that's broken, and you can move beyond that conflict to a place of mutual understanding and love and forgiveness, now it is a treasure indeed. And
mm-hmm.
I remember that I had a real conflict with my sister-in-law at one point. Man, I was just furious at her. And, you know, it doesn't even matter why. I had
mm-hmm.
my reasons, and I felt like they were good reasons. But ultimately, you know, I carried this conflict in my heart. You know, I carried my reasons for being mad at her around with me for about 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And because
feeling
I was
justified.
I felt like it was just absolutely justified. And even as a Urantia book reader, even, you know, because I mean, it just really wounded me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really more of my hurt. And like, you know, how could she do that to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was, you know, back in 1982, we did the People's Fair. We started doing the People's Fair, and we started, we started with a card table and some brochures telling people about the Urantia book. Here's this most incredible revelation that tells us about real forgiveness and about love and about patience and about tolerance and about perseverance and and about getting to know people's motives and sentiments, right? And so here I am standing there at this booth at the People's Fair, and this was probably in 84, and I'm telling people about the Urantia book and this marvelous revelation, and my little niece, my sister-in-law's daughter, came running up to me and just out of nowhere threw her arms around me and gave me this big hug. And she said, Aunt Paula, Aunt Paula. And she threw her arms around me, and I immediately started looking for her mom and dad. You know, my first instinct say, oh, it's my niece. Where's your mom and dad? And I looked up, and I looked across, you know, maybe 10 feet, and there was my sister-in-law and my brother standing there. And I'll never forget the look on my sister-in-law's face. I still get choked up to think about this. She was looking at me like, I want to love you too. I want to run up and embrace you. I want to hug you. But you don't want me to. You don't love me anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And my heart just melted like butter.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, what a hypocrite am I to stand here telling people about love and forgiveness when I can't even forgive someone in my own family, someone I love, someone I've known. I knew this woman since she was a child. I went to grade school with her. And I thought, what a hypocrite am I that I can't forgive this person. Yeah, she hurt me and all of that. But so what? And I would want to be forgiven. We all hurt people. We all do
so,
things.
Then did your resentment melt away?
Oh, my gosh, yes. And I made it a point, Joan, at that very moment to say, I'm never going to do that again. You know, I am never going to do that to anybody again. I'm not going to, you know, to make them suffer for my love. It's not worth it.
But another important point, I think, Paula, is it isn't necessarily the other person that you make suffer, but it's ourselves that
That's
suffer
right.
if we can't forgive. And I remember when one of our leaders at a workshop talked about, as long as you feel any bit of resentment, you haven't fully forgiven that other person.
I agree
person.
With that 100%. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I, it's funny because somebody once said, well, forgiveness is just refusing to make someone pay back their debt. But it's more than that. It is a change of heart toward a person. And I don't say that to condemn us. You know, when you say that, Joan, I don't mean that in a condemning way, like, well, if you still feel any resentment, you haven't fully forgiven. It's just pointing out that it's a process.
Right, it's a process.
Forgiveness is a process. And that process is not completed until the resentment is gone. Now, I will say one thing. There's something you said, Paula, that I want to get back to. You said that, I know. You were saying you felt like a hypocrite because you can't even forgive someone in your own family. But I will say this, though. I think that people in our own family are the hardest ones to forgive because they're the ones that we have, whether we admit it or not, those are the ones that we've bonded with the most. And when you bond with someone and they hurt you, that's going to mean a lot more than a stranger hurting you. So I think it's the hardest hurt to heal from, for me at least personally, is the hurts have been inflicted by my own family.
May I add something more?
Absolutely.
I recently had the experience in a study group in our church. We spent several weeks discussing a lovely book called The Art of Forgiving, When You Need to Forgive and You Don't Know How. It's by Lewis B. Smedes, S-M-E-D-E-S. And one of the things I learned from that book, well, two important things that were kind of new to me, and that is that when you forgive someone, like, say, often happens when there's a divorce and or when a couple separates, that forgiving the person doesn't mean restoring or taking them back into the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can
mm-hmm.
forgive the person, but that doesn't mean that you still want to be married to them. And this is an important distinction, I think, because a lot of times people think, well, usually it happens to the woman. Well, if I forgive him, that means I have to take him back. No, it doesn't mean that.
Absolutely.
And then there was another thing that I needed to hear, and that is, again, like you mentioned about forgiveness as a process, and that people have to forgive in their own time.
Absolutely.
I realized that I was trying to push a younger family member into forgiving her mother. And it became clear that a person can only forgive when they've worked through the process, and you can't push them, so to speak.
Well, you know what it's
like. To forgive
like,
before they're ready.
You know what it's like, John? It's like grieving a loss. You know, that's really what it's like. Especially if you've been hurt, it's really, you have to go through those emotions. You have to. Now, sometimes it takes. Sometimes it takes longer than other times, and sometimes it takes. It depends. And also, I think it's really hard when the person, if you've been hurt by someone, and the person who hurt you doesn't want to apologize. That makes it even more difficult. I think. For me, and I think it's funny you should mention that the title of that book, the subtitle was "When You Want to Forgive But You Don't Know How," because I've always wanted to do a workshop. I'm going to do a workshop at a Urantia conference with a very similar title, like "I Want to Forgive But I Don't Know How."
Mm-hmm.
But
me
to
too.
Me, the Urantia book gives us so many clues. I think I mentioned this earlier on the air today. There's so many places I can think of, at least three places in the book that say you can't really love someone until you understand them, and I think the mm-hmm. same thing is true of forgiveness. You can't really forgive someone until you understand. It's kind of like the caveman situation that they tell
mm-hmm.
us about. You know, when you get a broader perspective, and one of the things that I think makes it one of the things that I've concluded, and it may sound like an excuse, and I don't mean it to be. I think it's just reality. I think we need to be gentle with ourselves, because I don't think we're going to be able to forgive every single person in this life. And the reason I don't think we'll be able to is because we're not going to be able to understand every single person. We can start the process, but I don't think the process is really complete until there's mutual understanding. And so, you know, so when Jesus gives us commands, he gives us an eternity to obey them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's important, though, also to realize that we're in the reality workshop, and we need to start to practice now, you know?
Yes, absolutely.
It's not enough to just say, well, I know, Father, you want me to forgive, you know, but I just don't feel like it today, you know? You really have to challenge yourself, and there's a great quote in the Urantia book about if there is a troublesome mortal in your life, get into the habit of praying for that person every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's such an intriguing quote to me, because it just seems like such the opposite of what you'd want to do. You know, in fact, so often if there is somebody that really troubles us, we curse that person every day, right?
Right.
We think
right.
about that person, and in our heart we go, oh, gosh, just the thought of having to go face that person just gives me the creeps or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe it is a work associate, or maybe it's an ex associate or whatever, that for whatever reason we have to keep dealing with. And but here's the Urantia book telling us, pray for that person every day. And just recently, our good friend Thomas Strasser sent me a prayer, and he said, this was a great epiphany, and I'm so glad you brought up forgiveness, because he said it was the prayer a prayer to let go of resentment.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, it was about his ex and his best friend who ended up together. And gosh, that just hurt him so bad. And, you know, you can imagine what a hurtful
what
situation
a betrayal.
That was for him. And he could not, he could hardly get over it. He said it was just awful. And another Urantia book reader told him, Thomas, what you need to do is pray for that person every day. And Thomas said, you know, I can't do that, and that isn't going to help. And his friend said, believe me, Thomas, what you need to do is pray for that person every day. And he said, I want you to pray for that person's well-being, both of them. He said, I want you to pray that they both are happy and well
mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
find what they are looking for in life and find the peace and the joy and the satisfaction that they are looking for. And Thomas said, he said, okay, I'll do this, but it's not going to work. And he said by the second week of praying for them every day, not only did his resentment completely go away, but all of a sudden the love for these two dear people in his life came back into his
mm-hmm.
heart. And he was able to embrace the fact that, you know, maybe they didn't mean to hurt him. Maybe, you know, you can't choose passion. And we go through life hurting each other. We don't mean to always. Sometimes
right,
we do.
Right.
You know, often we don't. And we're just, you know, in a sense, just living out this drama, this passion play. And it, as Jesus said, you know, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors.
Mm-hmm.
In a way, he was saying, look, we're all going to make debts. We're all going to hurt somebody. and we're all going to want to be forgiven. And he was very explicit about, to the degree that you're able to forgive your fellows, you open up the reality of forgiveness in your own self to receive the forgiveness of God.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
It's not that God doesn't forgive you. It's just that when you forgive others, you create a receptor for the reception of forgiveness then, and understand that you are forgiven. Just as you have forgiven your fellows, God has forgiven you, and now you understand it. The circuit is complete.
I think one of the things that when you talked, Paul, about saying, you know, I don't feel like forgiving today or whatever. I think that what I do when I get that way, I think it's important though for us to be honest with the Father about our feelings. And so when I finally come to the conclusion, you know what? When I get that way, when I start feeling like I can't forgive this person, whatever, I just tell God that. I say, you know what, Lord, I can't do it right now. You need to do for me what I can't do for myself. And that's where I think turning it over to God comes in. You know, when we can't do it in our own strength, you know, saying to God, you know what, I can't. It's like I talked before about my relationship with my mom on the air and how difficult it is, and I live with her at the moment, and that makes it even more difficult. But you know, I came to a place in that relationship about a year ago where my mom said some things that were really hurtful to me. It was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And I said, I just finally said, you know what, I'm so tired of working on this relationship. I'm not going to do it anymore. Now, on the one hand, that may sound like laziness or inertia, but I was able to redeem that by saying, you know what, Lord, if you want to fix it, you fix it. And so, you know, I think the praying for the person is really important, because what it does is it allows God to do the work that we can't do ourselves at the moment.
Well, and we always need that spiritual help.
Yeah.
I agree with you completely, Andre, but the point I was making was just about to pray for this person. I mean, it doesn't occur to us to do that, to pray for somebody who's hurt us. And Thomas told me, he said, Paula, you just wouldn't believe how well this works. You just pray for them every day. You pray for their well-being. You pray for their health. You pray for their happiness. He said, and suddenly the change is within you, and everything is better. And I believe that. I'm absolutely convinced he's right, and, of course, the Urantia book confirms it. But, hey, do you want to take a couple more calls?
Sure. I want to just say one thing, that one more thing, and that is that I think one of the reasons Jesus tells us to pray for those who persecute us and bless those who curse us, I think one of the reasons he says that to us is because, you know what? If those people are happy, then they're probably not going to curse us anymore. they're probably doing it because they're unhappy.
That's a very good point. Joan, hang with us here, okay?
Okay.
Joan, can you hang on with us?
Yes, I can, but go ahead, take another caller.
Okay, hold on. Norman Ingram. Hello, Norman. Maybe Norman's just listening. Crystalline, is it you?
It is me. Hi. Good morning. Hi, Andre.
Hi, Crystalline.
I'm glad you made it home safely.
Yeah, after hours and hours of sitting on a plane, yes. It was way too late.
I'm sorry, though, that you're not still here.
Well, thank you
very
much.
It would have been nice to have had you here longer. But anyway, I just wanted to say that this is interesting because my mom is on the line with you, Joan. Hi, Mom.
Hi.
But just one of the things your Ranch book talks about in terms of parenting is that your children learn more from your loyalties than what you tell them or talk to them about, but actually what you do and how you live your life. And in the forgiveness arena, I have to say my mom has been a really good role model, because both she and my father dealt with, a lot of hatred in the village. She was telling that story earlier about the man in church who stood up and said all these things against my dad. There was also another situation where my folks had been told that there was a group of people coming to attack them. And my father refused. Some of the other people in the village who were sort of still on their team had advised them to leave town to avoid this conflict. And my dad refused to leave. And just the way my parents handled that situation. I heard about that growing up, and I was sort of so proud of them for their courage and their forgiveness and tolerance. And
so what did they do, Christy? Did they leave or did they stay and face
Well, actually, Mom can tell that story better than I can, but just there have been so many situations where I've seen either one or both of my parents under attack, and I'd like to get back to that story about the village and tell a story about my mom and what she was talking about before about forgiving your ex and you know, sort of encircling them in love and forgiveness and being able to love them without necessarily wanting to be married to them again. This was several years after my folks' divorce. My dad was remarried, living in another city and working for the state government in another state. And he was being targeted politically and publicly in the newspapers and everything, really being lambasted for a decision that had been made by his predecessor. He was a health department official, and he just took a huge hit for a health problem that had occurred in this state as a result of the decisions the guy who had been in the office before him had made. And my mom got a call from a reporter asking her for dirt on my dad.
Wow.
Figuring, of course, his ex-wife is going to smear him and give him a lot of good dirt to print in the paper. And Mom wisely assessed what this guy was up to. And she just beamed about him on the phone. Oh, he's just the most wonderful man and really got a lot of honesty and integrity and courage and, you know, I was really proud to be his wife. And, you know, it's like what she said about him was so glowing and so completely not what this reporter was looking for. And I was really proud of her for that. And
I might add something else here, Christy, because, at that instant when that newspaper reporter first called, I could feel the temptation, you know. I knew of things that I could have said that would have, you know, fed what he wanted. But I think that was really the spirit within me that said, no, Joan, you don't want to go there. You know, and it was the spirit that helped me, that kind of insisted that, nah, you're not going to go along with this negative stuff. So then I was able to give several positive instances, you know, of his dedication and good works and so on.
And another situation where someone was attacking my mom and my mom's character, and this was someone who had spent years attacking mine and attacking me. And when she started to go off on my mom, and the things she had to say about my mom were just so completely wrong. It wasn't even that I was biased in favor of my mother. It was just that the accusations she was making were just not at all part of my mom's list of shortcomings. They were not even in the ballpark. And I felt suddenly flooded by this understanding and this sympathy for this person, that she was so confused about who my mom was and so obviously afraid of her or in some way threatened by her, that it totally changed my own perception of her attacks on me. It wasn't personal and it wasn't real. It wasn't even based in fact. And that so many times the people who hurt us really don't know what they're doing. They
well,
really
you know
don't
what
know what
yes,
they're
exactly.
doing.
Yes, exactly. That's what we've been talking about, yes.
They're hurting themselves. And so what they're doing is they're just acting out the hurt that's inside themselves, and it's just spewing out all over everyone else.
Right.
And
my mom,
know,
I'm sorry.
What the Arantia book is, or what Jesus says, is that we should love each other with a startling affection. And I've asked myself, why would it be startling? What would be startling about affection? Do you ever wonder about that? I mean, because you know, it's not. It's a strange thing to say startling affection in the same phrase. And I've come to the conclusion that what he's getting at is the fact that it's startling because nobody expects it. It's like that reporter who called your mom to get some dirt on her ex, and he was probably startled by the fact that she wasn't going to give him any dirt. She was going to tell him what a wonderful guy this is. And that's startling. People don't expect it, and that's why it's startling. When you forgive somebody, when you truly forgive somebody, it's startling.
Yeah, because I agree with that 100%, what you're saying. And Paula, you know, first of all, I want to also just thank you guys for talking about this whole thing about praying for someone, because it's reminding me to do that, because we forget. You know, I forget to do that sometimes. I mean, as I said before, you know, going back with, and you know, if you really think about it, the Urantia book is not asking a lot of us when it's asking us to pray for someone. It's not saying go spend time with that person, go, you know, bare your soul to that person and give them all your possessions. It's saying just pray for them, you know. And I used to think that in order to love someone, I had to spend time with them, but that's not necessarily true, because I mean, again, going back to the whole situation with my relationship with my mom, which is the defining one in my life right now in terms of unresolved conflict and unresolved resentment. You know, I don't have to make myself vulnerable to her. I don't have to spend all kinds of time with her. But if I pray for her, in fact, you know, I'll tell you something, an interesting story. My mom is married again now. She's remarried, and she has a great marriage, actually. And it's really actually, that's the best thing that's ever happened to her. When her husband's around, she's fantastic to be around. And, you know, it's interesting because back in the 90s, after my dad had died, that's exactly what I'd do. I'd go to Mass. I was Catholic at the time, and I would pray that God would find her a good man. And you know what? It happened. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I just want to thank you guys for, you know, putting that reminder in me, because it's so easy to forget.
Well, and I wanted to say too, that this same person who had sort of been, you know, literally attacking me for years, and to know that I knew my mother had been praying for her for years and years.
Mm.
And I had not, actually. I had been holding on to a lot of resentment. And when I had that experience with her sort of attacking my mom, while I knew that my mother was praying for her regularly, and it was really a transforming event for me, because I was able to start to pray for her. And I'm glad we had this topic on, because I've stopped, and I need to go back to doing that again.
Yeah.
And one of the things that had happened to this person earlier in her life was she had had an almost fatal car accident and a really severe head injury, and was not really mentally too stable. And, you know, when you research what happens to people who go through that type of injury, it often is really personality altering. And whatever kind of propensity there might be for paranoia or for, you know, anger and resentment, you know, sort of gets really magnified by having that type of head injury. And there are certain syndromes that go along with that. And I was really able to let go of that resentment. And I've been through another situation with her in the last year or two that sort of reactivated that anxiety in me. And I realized that I do need to start including her in the people I'm praying for, because it's not only for me that, you know, that forgiveness. It's also really important for her to feel like your sister-in-law, Paula, to feel when she's with you that you have forgiven her, and that that you accept her and your love, and that you are a safe place for her to come for a hug if she needs it. Because hostility doesn't have to be spoken, and it doesn't have openly revealed. People can sense the hostility you have towards them, whether it's spoken or not. And a lot of us think that, well, I'm being nice to her, or I'm being nice to him, so I don't see why he should feel uncomfortable around me. But, secretly, you think it's secret, that you really resent them, or you really feel a lot of disrespect for them. Well, they can sense that.
That's right. That's right.
And
well,
so
and
I
know,
think it is important to cleanse that from within yourself. Go ahead.
Oh, it is. It absolutely is. And you really need to, you know, the Urantia book also tells us that it's not only important to pray for someone, it's also important to let them know you're praying for them. And I don't think you can do that. I mean, that can get a little dicey if you say to somebody you're having a bad relationship with.
Yeah,
well,
I don't know how comfortable I'm going to be doing that.
I'm for you, you know, because, you know, that can be a weapon. But, I mean, in all sincerity, to say, you know what, I'm praying that you're happy. I'm praying you have a wonderful 2009. I'm praying that, you know, that you really enjoy yourself this coming year and do something you love to do. You know, to say something just sincere. And,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of times people use prayer as a weapon, like, you know, well, I'm going to pray for you that you don't burn in hell, you know, that kind of thing. And that's, you know, that's not what I'm talking about, obviously. It's in all sincerity, with love and forgiveness, when you're praying for someone. And the Urantia book says this, to tell that person you're praying for them. Whether you're praying for their health, whether you're praying for their well-being, you know, it doesn't matter, friend or foe, to just let them know, you know, I'm praying for your well-being.
You know, I think that what's hard for me about that is, since I'm having a bad relationship with someone, I mean, I did tell my mom after she found her husband, I told her that I had prayed for her, that God would find her a good man, you know, and she goes, and she just says, well, I guess, you know, that's what happened, you know. But I think... I think what's hard for me about doing that while I'm doing it is, you know, saying to my mom, I'm praying for you, is I feel like I'm opening myself up to get hurt. Because whenever I've shared things that's a very vulnerable thing for me to share. And whenever I've shared vulnerable things with her before, you know, I just get kicked in the shins a lot. I never know what to expect. And so it's really, you know, that's a hard one for me, I have to say.
Even Covey addresses that, Andre, and he says, and you're absolutely right, you know, he says, you know, you make deposits and withdrawals on relationships. And if somebody exposes their tender underbelly to you and you keep punching them in it every time, then they're not going to do that anymore. And I think that's what you're talking about, and I completely understand that. And that's another issue. That's not forgiveness, and we've touched on it a little bit. It's about trust.
Right, right.
Make
right,
yourself
right, right.
vulnerable to somebody who you don't trust, again, is, you know, I mean, that's another whole issue. So I think you bring up a really good point. We have another caller. Shall we take another caller? We're having such a great party here. Hold on. Let's see.
This is becoming like a classroom where we're practicing with teachers. This is really
right.
scary. We're actually doing something here, man.
514, you're on Block Talk.
Hi, everyone.
Hello,
hi,
Diane.
Hi, Diane.
It's actually a family party, isn't it? Hi, Crystalline. Hi, Joan.
Hi, Diane.
Yes. I just wanted to share with you folks a pearl of wisdom, a little gift I received for Christmas. And I just wanted to share it with your listeners, Andre and Paula, because I thought maybe it would help them as well. And it's totally in line, totally in line with what the four of you have been talking about. I just came back from my family for Christmas celebration. And as some of you know, I come from a large family. We were 12 in my family, and that's not counting the husbands and the wives and the children and all this. And for the longest time, for many years, I felt sad in a way. I always feel so close to my family, and I love them very much, and I'm always anxious to go there for Christmas. Yet at the same time, for many, many years, I felt like a distance, like a something, a river between them and me in a way, because I love God so much and I love Jesus so much and spirit and all this and spiritual matters. And I realized that at the same time, talking with all of you, listening to Cosmic Citizen, meeting you, Crystalline, this summer and being at ICO8, we get to be spoiled to
yes.
meet people that are spiritually minded and that we just rejoice together. So this time, this year, I went to my family for Christmas, and I had the most beautiful little gift. So here it is. I was with them, and there was a lack happening. At the same time, I realized that the life and teachings of Jesus is really there to teach us something, to teach us. He knew that someday we would go through some of those experiences ourselves. So he's the recipe book. So as I was with my family, and even though I loved them and we had a laugh and all this, I was missing that bonding that I feel so much with all of you within the Urantia community. And then, reflecting on Jesus' life and teachings, I was wondering what would be relating to that. And then I remember reading about Jesus having a certain distance with his family, being very, very close to Ruth, and then being very close to others, and being medium-tempered, I would say, tepid with some, and then being distant with others. And because of them, not understanding him. And then I was reflecting on that. I was praying, and at a certain point, I was feeling sad. I was praying Jesus and talking with him and saying, Jesus, why is it like that? And then I heard, you know, have you heard the expression in English, blood is thicker than water?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So I was saying to Jesus, but Jesus, I love to go in my family so much because, like they say, and they keep telling me from the time I was a little girl that blood is thicker than water, so it's important to go in my family. Yet I feel like I would love to connect with them. What is the matter? And then I heard the story, the phrase, blood is thicker than water, yes, but spirit is what keeps us together.
Wow.
And I thought, wow, this is so beautiful because, yes, blood, being family, is thicker than water if you think that water is strangers. But Diane finished the sentence. It's like the world of duality. So there's two sides to that story. And the other side is spirit is what keeps you together. And then I realized that's what it is. With my sister, Marie Carole, who is my best friend, we both connect in Jesus. We both connect in spirit. We both connect in love. And so we are like two fingers of the same hand. But at the same time with other people, just like Jesus lived in his family, there is a distance. And it's not before, like you were saying, Paula, I used to not feel resentment, but not even hold a grudge, but you know what I'm talking, like feel bad. But this year, it was so beautiful. It's like I blessed them all. I felt a tremendous peace within me and acceptance, the humility of accepting the differences and just looking at them. I was smiling, I was blessing them, and even when we got to connect and there was that lack of connection, I even smiled, understanding from knowing and saying, yes, as you said, Andre, getting the bigger picture.
Mm-hmm.
I just looked at them and blessed them and thought, well, this is one day of the whole year that I will see them. You might as well enjoy it, Diane.
But you know what's interesting? It's interesting, though, Diane, as you're talking, because, and I will even do a little bit of a, not a contradiction to what you're saying, but a little different perspective on it. I'm glad you brought up some of the things you brought up. I actually am very comforted by the fact that Jesus was distant from some, because I'll be honest with you, I'm not close to my family at all, really. And I hate to say this, but a lot of them, it's worse in some ways. I don't even hold resentment towards a lot of them. So a lot of them, I'm just indifferent to them because I just don't, I mean, some of these relatives of mine, I mean, I hate to say it, but if I never saw them again in this life, you know, I really probably wouldn't care one way or the other. I don't even, it's not even that I dislike them. I'm just very, very distant from them. And I hope this doesn't sound self-righteous in any way, but I'm very comforted when I hear that, when that Jesus didn't, you know, was distant with some of his family. Because that says to me, you know, even Jesus couldn't get his family to understand him. And even Jesus didn't always spend time with them. You know, they always wonder, where are you? You know, he's, you know, remember that time when Jesus was, he got a message from his family and they said, you know, your brothers and sisters are looking for you and your mother are looking for you. And he said, who is my brother? Who is my sister? Who is my mother? Those who do the will of my Father. You know, and I think that, you know, Jesus had his family obligations, but he did not, I think that one thing that we need to make a distinction, for me at least this has helped, I make a distinction between my spiritual family and my biological family. And I look to my spiritual family for my primary means of support and connection and the people that I'm really going to invest my, primarily in terms of my relationships. And the other thing I was going to say to you, Diane, you mentioned something about, the blood is thicker than water thing. To be honest with you, I found that not to be true. I found that, I look at water as the spirit thing in a sense. I mean, I guess I'd say that spirit is thicker than blood, and that's kind of what I think you were saying.
Yeah.
But I found that just because someone's related to me biologically, that doesn't mean I'm going to have a spiritual connection with them or a real bond with them.
But the reason why I said that, Andre, is because when I was told the expression from my family, yeah, but Diane, you must come and celebrate with us because, remember, blood is thicker than water. And what I meant is that, you know, it is true that our family, in a way, is closer than pure strangers that we've never met, never seen in our life. So you will agree with that. But at the same time, the pearl that I received, Andre, was the acceptance that, you know, sometimes when we do feel that distance, it does create a feeling of either resentment or not belonging or separation or anyway, some kind of negative emotion. And what I'm saying is that with this beautiful little gift of blood is thicker than water, yes, but spirit is what keeps us together. And then it made me understand that that's where it goes even higher. Yes, you may start together in life because you must originate from somewhere, you know, so you have no choice about that. But then it's when you progress in spirit that you will separate the wheat from the chaff. You will get the sieve, what I call the sieve technique. It's a sieve, you know, we're all in it together, but then what goes through and what stays? So it's spirit that brings us together. And then I came home and I was so anxious for your program, and I was so anxious to listen to all of you because it was like, yeah, that's where my heart is, you know. But now at the same time, I blessed them. I sent them love, and they actually came to me with gifts, and it was the same, you know, the same way. It was like we accepted each other in the sense that go your way, I go my way, but there's no more negative friction or static, like a radio station that gets static, you know. And from that, to me, I think was a beautiful teaching from Jesus. I think for him to say that, there had to be a total acceptance of the situation and no resentment, no feeling, not even a grudge from not belonging. It was just like, yeah, it is like this, that's it. And that brought peace of mind, and peace in my heart meant peace around. And it was great.
I think part of Jesus's distancing himself from his own family was not necessarily based on the fact that, you know, I feel like in some ways it was more based on the notion that they could tug at his heartstrings because he did love them so much. And they inhibited his work in many ways because he did care so deeply for them, that he really had to make that break. And I think that, you know, that's also part of growing up and becoming your own person and moving into your own work is moving away from your nuclear family and being able to find yourself, because oftentimes your nuclear family will give you more static than anyone else about who you are. And it's like Jesus saying, you know, a prophet is not without honor, saving his own.
Well, yeah, and I think what you're saying is absolutely true, Paula, but I think Jesus, sometimes though Jesus said certain things because he knew that we were going to struggle with them. Like, you know, like I think, you know, remember what he said, you know, that this gospel divides sons against fathers and daughters against mothers. And, you know, a man's foes will be those of his own household. Now, that may not have been true in his case, but I think, you know, that's true, you know, that's often true for a lot of other people. And the same thing with the prophet is not without honor except in his own home. That one has a lot of meanings.
I
think he was not, I correct me if I'm wrong, but I think, you know, for example, that means a lot of things. Jesus was not accepted by the Jews. He had to become accepted by the Gentiles. There's a lot of meaning to that one.
He was not accepted in Nazareth, for instance. But
yeah, exactly.
You know, in Galilee, and, you know, it. But the other point I wanted to bring up, too, and I'm glad you mentioned Jesus and his nuclear family, because Jesus, just like you, Diane, just like me, just like all of us, I always find it so touching that whenever he was in Bethany, he went to the home of Mary, Martha,
yes.
Lazarus.
Yes, right. That's
human
true.
Beings were as close to a spiritual family as we feel about each other, as he had on this planet. He loved his apostles. He loved everybody. Jesus loved everybody. And oftentimes when I'm having a difficulty with a person, I will ask Jesus to show me that person through his eyes, because then I feel his love for that person, and whatever I'm feeling, I get over it. But when Jesus was, he couldn't go near Bethany without making it a point to be with these three people. And I've pondered that, the preciousness of the friendship that he had. And I think that on this planet, as a human being, those three were as close to true peers as anybody he had. And they loved him. They didn't ask anything of him. They just took his love. They cherished his company. They hung on every word he said. They believed him. They had faith in him.
They always saw the best in him. And
yes.
That was something that sometimes his own family couldn't do. I mean,
that's
you
right.
Think about the expectations that his own family, especially his mom, you know, the expectations that she had of him. And he knew she was really going to be disappointed, because he wasn't going to be the person she wanted him to be. He was going to be the person he was, and that he was going to be the person his Father in heaven wanted him to be. And, you know, for all of us who've ever had parents, especially those of us who've grown up in families with our biological parents, because I think maybe you were talking, Paula, a while ago about how it's kind of different with May, because she's not your biological offspring. She doesn't push your buttons quite the same way as your biological kids do, who are so much like you and reflect back to you your own weaknesses, perhaps. But for all of us who've grown up with biological parents, you know, it's like so much of what they want for us is sort of a completion of their own unfinished business. And we feel that way towards our own kids, you know, like even with my stepdaughter, you know, the things that I had the hardest time with her were the things that I had the hardest time with in my own character struggle.
Hmm.
And I think that's
your own weakness.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why our biological family is so challenging for us. They know us so well on the one hand, and yet for the most part they have pigeonholed us so early on in life that they can't really see our growth and development.
Yeah.
The
and that's
same
how they
way
hold
that other
back.
People can.
Pardon
that's
me? How they hold you back. I think that's why sometimes it's important to distance yourself from your biological family so that you can live up to your full potential, because they have pigeonholed you to such an extent that they tend to hold you back. And that
that's
part
exactly
of the other problem with families is that you don't get to choose them.
Dr. Dave made a comment on the board of being like a parallel line, and you know, whatever line is drawn next to you, it doesn't necessarily, you don't really have a choice about that. So, you know, and we often talk about our family of choice and our regular family, you know.
Right.
But that's what I was talking about, Paula, exactly what you said, you know. The Bethany home was his spirit family. And at the same time, to finish my statement of earlier, the gift that I received by ricochet, you know, the expression by ricochet, like it bounced back to me, the gift that I received is that sometimes you just have to be distanced from something to realize how much you must appreciate it. Because even though meeting my family at Christmas yesterday and the day before, we celebrated, we ate together, we danced together, and we laughed together, and all this, that fed the body. But what I was talking about was much deeper. I was talking about feeding the soul. And as I realized that yeah, that's okay for a few hours, you know. At the same time, I realized how much I appreciated my spirit family.
Yes,
and not
yes,
one
exactly.
against the other, but one to feed my soul. I couldn't
yes.
wait to drive back and come to Cosmic Citizen. And, oh, my God, tomorrow morning, it's nice. I'm going to get up and listen to Paula and Andre and everybody, you know, because it feeds my soul. And I felt like, God, do we... Oh,
yes.
Do we really realize and appreciate how lucky we are to have this? You know, sometimes you take it for granted, but you just have to
yes.
be distanced from it a bit to realize that you come back to life, but with a capital L. When you all get together in spirit, you know, you really, truly, deeply come back to life as opposed to just dealing on the surface.
Oh, that's so true, Diane. I've had that experience so many times in my life. You know, because I grew up in a sort of an extended family missionary community overseas, we didn't necessarily see each other all the time, but there was that sense of spiritual community, especially between the kids who lived together in a boarding house for mission kids when we went away to school. Our parents all kind of lived scattered around in the bush and in the jungle and around, you know, places where they didn't have schools. And so my sense of community and of family always had much more of a sense of extended outside of my biological family, my sort of spiritual family. And when I moved to America and I was living in the Midwest, and I found it particularly challenging to have the kind of intimacy, the kind of real bonded closeness with my peers, as I was used to with the kids I grew up with and the international students that I went to school with. There was just a much closer, more trusting, more confiding level of fellowship than when I moved to the northern Midwest, which is kind of a little bit more distant kind of culture. And I had a real hard time with that, adjusting to that. And then when I got older and became involved in the sort of extended Urantia community, I really craved that again because I had experienced that before in my life. And so I had to be somewhere, had to move to Boulder, had to be surrounded by other Urantia book readers, so that when I needed that kind of spiritual family, that it was going to be available to me. I knew I could count on that in this community.
Crystal, you're blessed in a way that some of us are not blessed, though. And I think, and I'm not saying this to try to like, you know, I mean, to make you feel, put you on a guilt trip or anything. I just think it's really amazing. You're blessed in the sense that you have biological family that are readers.
I know.
Really, I mean, and I'm not, again, I'm sure you already realize how...
I do realize how lucky I am. I do. We actually sort of revel in that a lot together as a family.
Yes.
We really are so blessed to be able, you know, when, especially like at a conference where, you know, two-thirds of my family is there, you know, my biological family as well as my spiritual family.
Well, see, and that's the thing. You actually have an opportunity then for your biological family to be part of your spiritual family, which I think is just amazing.
And
you
I
know
think I really do recognize the blessing.
What's really amazing about that, what's so amazing about the Urantia book, you know, among many, many things that are amazing about it, is it takes you to another level of reality.
Yes.
It puts into perspective everything that matters and what matters most. And to be able to share that with other human beings, you know, Andre, you mentioned an experience you have with your mom that, you know, you make yourself vulnerable to her in the most spiritual way and she kind of slaps you down. Well, my own mother did that to me too. And what she succeeded in doing by doing that was stifling the ministry in me, not for everyone, but just for her. I wanted to minister to her, but I wouldn't anymore because she didn't accept it. She didn't honor it. She didn't want it. And so I stopped doing it. And that hurt me because, you know, she really needed my ministry. I could have helped her if she would have let me. And it wasn't until on her deathbed that she let me do it again.
But when you're sharing that level of reality with close, a nuclear family, and of course this is what God wants us to do. God wants us to have that level of reality in our nuclear family, and then that needs to expand out to our friends and expand out to our community and expand out to our state and then to our world and then to the universe. And, hey, we're cosmic citizens.
Exactly.
Yay.
Exactly.
That's what the show is all about, being a cosmic citizen, realizing that God loves all of us and that our job is to create that reality in life by allowing ourselves to become a conduit of that love and letting
Absolutely.
It flow through us. And I think, Diane, that's what you were saying, and it touches my heart because now when you go into your nuclear family and you're blessing them no matter what they're doing to you, no matter how unkind or snide things they're saying, you're just blessing them with your love, with your heart, with your smile, with your goodwill. Now you are being like God on this world, because that is exactly what God would do. I'm convinced. If Jesus was here, he blessed everybody, whether they accept his blessing or not. He didn't withhold it. He
you know, it's so true, Paula.
What?
Can I say something?
Of course.
It's so true, because when I was in my family at Christmas, and it's fresh, it just came out of the oven 48 hours ago, and as I was listening to you talking, Paula, I remember that in the Urantia book, they talk about things, meanings, and then values. And what I was trying to say is that at Christmas, being many people together, we were rejoicing. But at the same time, it was in relation to things. Most people were looking at each other, and I'm not putting it down. I'm saying we were in this merry spirit and all that. But at the same time, everybody was commenting like, oh, you have a beautiful dress. Oh, this is nice. Oh, I love the way your hair is done this year. We haven't seen each other for so long. But then, and they were talking about their riches, their material riches. And in my heart, even though I was smiling and all this, I was saying to myself, wouldn't it be beautiful if we would talk about our true riches, if we would go to our values, our spiritual riches? There's
right.
nothing wrong with material riches. And yes, I'm glad to see the changes and the everybody's doing well. But this is dealing on the surface. Let's go deeper. Let's go in spirit. Let's go where we are totally cemented together. And the beauty is that my sister, my beloved sister Marie, that I told you, she's my blood sister. Yet because we commune together in God, in Jesus, in Mother Spirit, well, we are forever linked together. As with my other sisters and my other brothers, I mean, I love them. God bless them, so their souls. But at the same time, it's like I was always trying to you know, connect and touch and touch, but it was like it would stay at the surface level, at the level of things, when I was trying to bring meanings to go to values so that we could have this everlasting connection. So it's in line with what you were saying, Paula.
Well, and certainly, you know, when we're a young family and, you know, your mother and father, they kind of would have instilled that in your family to go to that deeper level and be there. Just like, you know, Andre, you were saying that Crystalline is blessed, and she
yes.
is. They've, all of their lives, they've had that unity of spirit. They've shared that openly, freely. It doesn't mean that they'd never have conflict, but they just
I was going to say that, too. It's not like we don't have conflicts, but it is true that we know where to go to resolve those conflicts.
But in that spirit, conflict is the spice of life. Conflict does not mean war. Conflict
right.
is totally different from war. War is when you close your wall and you say, well, the heck with you, my way or the highway. Conflict is the spice of life. It shows you the color of the person. It shows you the individuality, the personality, the difference of points of view. But when you converge toward God and godliness, conflict is the spice of life. It's the color of life. And it brings you, it can even bring you closer when it's resolved, you know. You hug each other and you get even
Absolutely.
Closer.
I totally agree with you saying that. You know what? And I, one of the things I really appreciate about your answer book readers is that I'm able to have, it's like you and I were talking about this on the phone one day. You know, you can have a friendly disagreement and then you can go for a beer. You know, I don't drink beer, but
yeah.
You know, but that's, but that, I love that. I mean, I love the fact that I can, you know, I don't talk about my political views much on the air, but you know, I like the fact that I can talk about politics with the Urantia readers, and my political views are usually in the minority with a lot of them, and it's okay. And they don't take it personally. They don't sit there and say, "Oh, you're crazy," or "You're," or you know, "We don't want to."
Well, they don't reject you personally.
I'm sorry.
They don't reject you personally.
No, not at all. And they don't even reject. I mean, not only that, they don't even reject all of my ideas. You know, I find that a lot of times we actually end up having more in common than we think, and it's more of a. It's not only do they not reject me personally, but I think they. It's almost like they appreciate it. Like, hey, this is a different point of view. This is something to think about.
Exactly.
You know, it's. I just love that. They appreciate the beauty that can come from, you know, a friendly conflict. It's,
yes.
It's okay.
Yes.
We also really appreciate the benefit of adversity of thinking, and that we really don't think alike. And one of the things I really value about this extended community of Urantia Book readers is that when you're at a conference and you're sort of immersed in this sort of little Urantia bubble of intimacy and mental and intellectual stimulation and spiritual fellowship and unity. And you realize, wow, this is such a cross-section of culture. We are a group of people who under normal circumstances would not be hanging out
right.
together.
That's true.
We really do. And
that's
we've got
right.
people who are multimillionaires to people who are practically homeless. We've got people from all walks of life. We've got people from all different racial and economic backgrounds and even all religious backgrounds. You know, we've got Muslims, we've got Christians, we've got Jews, we've got ex-atheists or, you know, lots of metaphysical New Agers. We've got, you know, even now some Hindus and Buddhists and people from other less represented religions that are starting to really find out about the Urantia Book because of the internet. I mean, it's so exciting to really have this little melting pot. I mean, we really are.
But above all, we have children of God communing in spirit together.
Mm-hmm.
And when you commune like that, the rest is details. You don't pay attention to those details. Because when I still think when we die and we go to heaven, we don't ask each other, you know, what religion were you or what? And they don't welcome us up there, you know, saying, oh, put these ones in that room over there. They were there. Or put them over in that corner, you know. It's like those are details. So like you're saying, Crystalline, you know, it's that spirit of communion that we rise above. We really rise above all the human details like that because spirit is one and we commune
and
as one.
I wanted to say, too, in reference to Andre talking about, you know, do I realize how blessed I am having grown up in a family where we're all Urantia Book readers and we all really are actively studying this book together as well as separately. I wanted to just say, sort of make a plug for Urantia family. I was really moved a couple years ago when Mo Siegel sent a letter to the sort of the readership at large talking about his two different families, the family with his first wife where they didn't really teach the Urantia Book to their kids, where they sort of just figured if, you know, they would let their kids come to it on their own. And the second family where they actually raised their kids on the teachings of the Urantia Book and how different those two family cultures evolve.
Wow.
And I want to say that having come from a family that we were not indoctrinated by any means, how we were introduced to the Urantia Book in our family was through this thrilling adventure of what lay ahead. And really the idea of our cosmic citizenship as a given, as an, you know, that the love of God was something that was absolutely a given. We had to really go out of our way to reject God and to reject this universe adventure in order to not be part of it. It was approached almost the total opposite of the way most people indoctrinate their kids religiously. We were taught that, you know, that everything was possible in God. Everything was possible in the future and in the afterlife. Nothing, no dream of our hearts would ever go unfulfilled in the universe adventure.
Well, you know what, Crystal, what you're saying is so interesting to me, because so much of religion is based on conversion. It's based on, you know, going from the old way of life to a new way. But see, that conversion model is only one model. I think that when we, how different it would be if most people grew up in a family saying, you know what, you are a child of God. You are loved. You are,
yeah.
You know, you are, you don't have to become something else.
You don't have to do anything to earn it.
I'm sorry? Yeah.
You don't have to do anything to earn it. That's
right.
Who you
exactly.
Are.
Exactly. And you don't have to. And you don't have to even. You don't even have to receive Jesus as your Savior. He's already received you. You know. It's all very. You see. So you don't have to go through that conversion process. And I think, you know, and I understand to some extent why, you know, Christianity in particular is so built on conversion, because it's built primarily on the life of Paul, who was a killer, a persecutor of Christians, and had this incredible conversion experience. You know, so it's funny, because I remember talking to a conservative Christian a couple of years ago when I was trying to decide whether I wanted to get back into the Urantia book, and I told him, I said, you don't have to become a child of God. We already are children of God. He goes, but then there's no heart change then. But you know what? There is a heart change. It's a different kind of heart change. It's like a, it's like an expansion of your heart. It's like your heart just gets bigger.
Yeah. And I want to get back to
your heart is evolving. Your heart is a quality that evolves. It's not something that boom, it's there or it's not there. You know, your relationships and your experience deepens and expands. And, you know, you do have Jesus did clearly talked about being born again, born of the Spirit. But I believe with all my heart that that's the day you realize what has always been true, and that is that you are a child of God.
Right.
That you
that's
are
right.
a child of the infinite. In fact, you are. It's just what Christy is saying. She knew it all along because her parents never told her otherwise. They raised her to believe she was a child of the infinite and that all things are possible. She didn't really need to be born again because she got it from an early age, and I think that's ideal. Some people grow up thinking that they're worthless and miserable and wretched, and that they're, you know, or they grow up thinking that it's all about things, as Diane pointed out, it's all about things and superficial material. The point is that it's not. It's about God. It's about spirit realities, and that you are a child of the infinite spirit reality.
I want to share with you a personal experience, though, of revelation, of not necessarily being born again, but a real epiphany that happened to me as a youth. And it was during a time when I was, you know, particularly caught up in a material phase of my life. And I was very young and immature, and I was for a very, very short time involved in drugs. And I was had spent a weekend doing cocaine with some friends who were, I use the term loosely, but I had done quite a bit of it. And I left and I was spending the night in a hotel, and I had to go to work at 7 o'clock the next morning and be professional. And I had a night of absolute living hell, sort of the dark night of the soul, of feeling just absolutely useless and worthless and feeling like I was just the most horrible person on earth. And I couldn't sleep, and I knew that it was the drug wearing off my system, or that I was coming down off of this drug. And I knew that everything that I was feeling and experiencing was a lie. And I remember thinking, God, this feels so bad. This feels so bad to feel this way about yourself. This must be what people feel like when they commit suicide.
Wow.
And I'm so glad that I know this is a drug-induced experience, that none of the thoughts that I'm having and none of the feelings that I'm having are based on reality. And so I knew, and I spent the night praying, you know, the prayer that every addict or druggie does, which is that, you know, Father, you just get me through this night. I'll never do cocaine again, you know. And I didn't ever do it again because it was such a horrible experience. I thought, wow, why would anyone who's ever been through this experience once ever want to go back through it again? And so, it was my glimpse into what it's like for people who don't have that faith as a foundation in their life, who do not know that they're a child of God, and who do not know that they have an eternal, valuable part to play in the whole universe outworking of things.
Therein is salvation, Christy. That is salvation. That realization that you have an intrinsic value that is greater than any of this is your salvation. When you come to the conclusion that you matter, that your life has purpose and value, and that you have something good to give the world, and the world has something good to give you, that is your salvation. Jesus is saving us from ourselves, from our own tendencies to just debase our value.
Or even coming from a culture that debases our value, or a family that debases our value, or a world that debases our
value.
And Crystal, as you're talking, I mean, it's just making me realize, you know, how much of what I was told as a child wasn't true, you know,
right.
But it's so hard because it really is. I mean, that's why I think the Urantia book, you know, Jesus says in the Urantia book that you're what happens to the child the first 8 years of life are so important, because the reason it's so important is because children believe everything they're told, you know, and it stays with you. And I think, you know, it's hard to think hypothetically, but, you know, I think to myself, you know, what if I were raised in an environment where I was constantly told all the time that I was worthy and loved, and that God loved me, you know, just the way I was, and I didn't have to do anything to accept, to gain his acceptance, you know, how different that would be. And, you know, it just makes me realize, you know, how much of what I've struggled with, you know, does come from my upbringing. It's not coming from God. You know, God's not the one giving me those.
Right. He's not punishing you.
Right.
Someone else wants to join the party. Shall we let someone else in?
Of course.
The more the merrier.
Hold on. Sometimes it takes it's a second. It delays. I don't know why it does that.
Maybe I should say goodbye to everyone.
Bye, Diane. Happy New Year.
Bye, everyone. Two things I wanted to say.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, two things I want to say. Thank you so much for all your beautiful food that you feed with my soul. And second, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. I had to say it.
I love you too, very
love
deeply.
You.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Also, we should do our mower. Maybe we can save that till next week, Andre. It's up to you. I'll leave it up to you.
Oh, what time do we have now?
We have 19 minutes left.
How much?
19 minutes.
Well, let's go ahead and do that and play that, because next week is going to be next month, and I want to see if we can start a new ministry next month. So let's go ahead and do that. We have a Ministry of the Month feature that we do here at the Cosmic Citizen, and it is every month we are highlighting a new ministry, a different ministry, and right now we're doing truthbook.com, and we're going to do that for the last time today. Let's play a little segment of our interview with Mo Siegel, shall we?
Okay, and 647, hang in there. We'll get you when we come back.
Yeah. Well, that's great. I can totally relate to that and identify with that. And let me just just in closing, what would people, if people want to go to truthbook.com, I mean, obviously truthbook.com is the URL, but what kind of stuff will they find there?
Well, we have Quoted Today, which is very popular, and you can sign up and get a quote every day that you get a beautiful painting or piece of photography, and there's a quote from the book, and you can click onto that quote. And when you click onto that quote, it'll take you to where it is in the book. There's an audio portion, so you can listen to it. So Quote of the Day is great. There's a lot of pieces to it. You can see the book and all its translations on the site. The Jesus and the Urantia book is a lovely section, and again, we are illustrating part 4. There's a video section, an audio section. There's a beautiful art and image gallery. There is science. There's a section called How the Urantia Book Changed My Life. And if people would like to write a story about how it's changed their life, please go do it, because there's nothing better than having one person say what a revelation has done in their life to make their life better, to influence someone else. So there's a chat room and humorous stories and spiritual studies and topical studies, and the site is surprisingly deep.
Wow. Well, Mel, thank you so much for being with us on The Cosmic Citizen, and we hope to have you on as a guest for a longer time someday soon. And
Andre, come invite me someday, please, to talk about Urantia Foundation, because we're doing great stuff at Urantia Foundation.
Great. Well, thank you again for all the work you're doing, and thank you for your wonderful website, and we hope that many listeners will go to it. Again, the site is truthbook.com. That's www.truthbook.com. Thank you again, Mo, for being on the show.
Thank you.
Back again here on The Cosmic Citizen. You know, one of the things I love about our show, Paula, so many things I like about it, but I like the fact that we have talk, we have music, we've got interviews. We're just going to get more and more diverse and more interesting as we go. And I think it's great that we actually were able to talk a little bit about the name of our show and what it means today. That was a pretty significant thing.
Absolutely, Andre. It's a very significant thing. And, you know, sadly, when we did that segment, we lost all of our callers, but maybe they decided that it was a chance for them to, you know, bail. We've got 15 minutes left in the show. And we did have a call from area code 647. I encourage you to call again if you want to get on. The lines are wide open now, you guys. So if there's anybody that wants to call, Andre, you want to give everyone the number again?
Oh, absolutely. It's 646-716-8158. That's 646-716-8158. Today's your chance. Of course, our phones are always open, but today in particular is a time when we get to hear from you. I want to talk a little bit about, before we have a caller, if we can, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the things we've got planned for the upcoming weeks, because I want to, some topics that I want to discuss. Next week, we're going to have a good friend of mine who wants to remain anonymous. He's a psychologist. He's also a reader of the Urantia. We're going to talk about some different things. True and false guilt is our primary topic, but I also want to talk a little bit about, since it's New Year's, it's right after New Year's Day, a lot of people make New Year's resolutions. And I'll be honest with you, Paula, I'm not a big fan of them. You know, I think that they tend to not work very well. I always tend to say that New Year's resolutions are meant to be broken. But, you know, I want to talk a little bit about motivation. You know, how do people change? What is it that, you know, what can we, how do we build new habits? How do we do those kinds of things? So that's some of what we're going to discuss. I also, I'm going to get another friend of mine on who also wants to be anonymous. He's a Urantia book reader. And also teaches theology at a major university, is going to talk to us about the atonement doctrine and how it evolved, the history of it, its various incarnations, you know, why the Urantia book attacks it, or I shouldn't say attack, you know, tries to correct it so strongly. We also want to, I'm trying to get some people to talk about Carl Jung. That's something I really want to do, and I think I'll be able to do that. next week, Paula, is going to be a great week because it's a week I don't have a lot of work to do, so I can make some calls and get some future guests. So those are some of the things that, for those of you who don't know, Carl Jung was also a psychologist who was a very spiritual individual and was very interested in mythology, religion. In fact, he broke with Freud because Freud thought everything was based on sex, and Jung said, no, that's not true. There's a lot more to human nature than just sexual desire and sexual drive, and we have souls, and we are eternal beings, and Jung really understood that. In fact, a lot of you will be interested to know that Jung was one of the people that was kind of responsible indirectly for starting the 12-step movement, which led to Alcoholics Anonymous. He had a patient named Roland who was struggling with alcoholism, and he told Roland, he said, look, your struggle with alcohol is an unconscious search for God, and he said, you need a religious conversion, and he basically... So just there's so many interesting things that we can discuss. I want to also get into some debates and controversies about, in the Urantia book, issues like race. Are we ready for world government? That's another one I'd like to talk about. So I don't have all the guests lined up, but those are some of the things that I thought we could really get into in the next month or two or three.
Well, you know, it's perfect that you should say that because Larry suggested that maybe you touch on what's coming up. So I'm really glad you did do that. And we've had a wonderful, lively time on the board today, just discussing many things, language and the meaning of language. And, you know, Dr. Dave was on talking about family, and it's been a wonderful show. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I think we have a call from our dear friend Ann. So hold on, and I'll grab this call. Ann, is that you?
Hello.
Hey, Ann.
How are y'all doing?
Good. Oh,
great.
I just wanted to call in at the last. I've been on another computer here in Los Angeles and could not log in. And, Paul, I was texting you. The irony is I am a computer software consultant, so I find that kind of interesting. Ever the teacher, ever the learner. Not sure what happened, but it just won't go through. But I was also saying, Andre, that from a human standpoint, I couldn't enter into the chat room. And that it must be a faint hint to me what it feels like to be the thought adjuster because I couldn't communicate. I was wanting to communicate with everybody on the board. And the main reason I'm calling is I would like to say a word of prayer over your broadcast for the upcoming year. I'm so thankful that, Andre, that you were guided and that you heard the call and you accepted the call to bring forth this marvelous broadcast, and Paula, that you're co-hosting with him, and Larry, that you're being the quiet person in behind the scenes, which you always are, and all the others that are showing up on the chat board, and all those that are calling in, and I just want to pray, if that's okay.
Oh, please do.
Holy Father, Holy One of all, we thank you. We thank you for your presence. We thank you for your great gifts in our lives. And as was said earlier on the broadcast, you have brought diverse people forth on this planet to read this epical revelation. And as Paula, Andre, and Larry quietly goes forth in a new year, we ask your continued blessings. And most of all, that every person that hears this broadcast, that they be blessed, that they be blessed wherever they are in their lives, that they get enlightened, and that we continue to grow and grow in your spirit forevermore. In the name of all that was, is, and shall ever be, I feel your spirit, and I know this new paradigm of the school is going forth to bless this planet in all eons, forevermore. Amen and amen.
Amen. Thank you.
And so may it be. And you know, I just want to add, Anne, that, and all of our listeners, if you ever want to call and pray with us, or if you want us to pray with you, please don't hesitate. Let's, you know, share that together, our faith, that when
amen.
We pray, our prayers are heard, and the Spirit moves and acts on
us. You know, I always keep an oil light burning, as you know, Paula. So I couldn't bring my oil with me on the airline. But I found a little candle that's made from oil, So I said, okay, because got to have that light. That's a symbol for me. As you know, I do like symbols. And I have a little prayer box that when people do call in for prayer, please tell them. I encourage everyone, if you do need specific prayer, put it on the chat board if you don't want to call in, and we will put your name. Even if you don't want to list your name, just say what you need prayer about, and we'll put it. Because prayers, I just saw on TV a special again, I don't know if any of you saw it, about the effectiveness of prayer in the healing power that goes forth. And we're told in the Urantia book, in the beneficent personality, is that the term that's used? That if someone comes in the presence, and I know we Urantia book readers disagree about the effectiveness of prayer as far as the healing power directly, but I know that once the mind is healed, the body will follow in line, right?
Right.
So and also I want to share with this. I know y'all, you can go online. Did either one of you hear or see Bill Moyer's special on TV last night about all the great religions on the planet? And I can't remember the name of the broadcast. I'm looking toward my husband here in the house. But Bill Moyer, you know, is on the public broadcast. And it was a marvelous way to be ending the year, to see the commonality. And Karen Armstrong was on there, and Dalai Lama, and several other people that some of us have had the honor to actually meet. So I'm just very, very pleased to see that shifting. And one more thing, on the TV, when we would turn it on here, why can't they give forth the good news that they give during the holiday season? They need to do that all the time.
You're here.
So I
The Urantia book says, with so much good news to publish and proclaim, why should we be so, hung up on the bad news merely because it seems to be a fact? You know, we have to do both. We absolutely have to do both. And the good news is, just as Jesus said, the sun rises on us every morning. And God shows his blessings on us every single day. And we live and breathe and we have eternal opportunities. And that's the good news. The good news is that every conflict, every difficult thing is just a transient thing. It's a temporary bump in the road. It's not a permanent thing. We can, you know, we were talking about conflict and we talk about disease. And our good friend Don Estes told me one time, he said, I was asking Jesus how he healed people one day. I was praying to him and I was asking him, how did you do that? How were you able to heal them? And he said, the word I got back from the master was, I simply got them through the time of their illness.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah.
You're done.
And everything has a time. And, you know, if it doesn't kill you, it makes you better. But even if it does kill you, that's just your material body. You go on. You have an eternal self. And that's what we've been talking about today. And this has been a very rich show, and I really have enjoyed it so much. So, and
I'm sorry, my phone is not giving me proper feedback, and I apologize. I'm interrupting.
No, that's
right. I just want to
thank you for saying that we will pray for people and to put it on the board. If you don't want to pray with us on the air, that's fine. We have the prayer warriors out there. There's Ann and Larry and Bro Dave and Norman Ingram and Diane LeBrec. We will pray for you. Put it on the board and say, I need your prayers, and that's all you need to say, you know?
Well,
so thanks
for reminding.
Someone
said earlier, I'll take 30 more seconds, and I keep interrupting you. I apologize. I'm getting a delayed feedback on this cell phone.
Someone earlier
talked about how this is our family. And we are in L.A. Taking care of our daughter's home while they're in Oregon. And we're not with our blood family. But we've already sat with Don and Jamie and Pierre and Marlene. And tonight we're going to see Norman and many other people. And my husband, had never met a lot of these people. And he said, you know, the instant you and Marlene embraced and Pierre walked in, there were, and Don and Jamie, of course, but Marlene and I had not physically seen each other for a long time. There was that, he said, there was a sense of family and commitment and just a marvelous, marvelous feeling. And I am so thankful for that. And again, well, you have 3 minutes. I'm going to hang up. Bye.
Thank
Happy
you,
New
Ann.
Year, everyone.
Goodbye, Ann.
Happy
Bye.
New Year. Well, Andre, you know, I'm getting to where I really enjoy these open call shows because they're spontaneous and they just kind of take on a life of their own, and that's fun, and it's a nice respite from having a more focused show. So it works well, I think. Andre? Oh, darn, I lost Andre. Well, you know, folks, Andre, if you're out there, call us back. And, you know, everyone on the board is saying peace to Anne and Happy New Year. And that's such a blessing. And since we're coming down to the last minute, folks, and Andre got bumped off, I'm just going to play the cosmic sign-off and wish you all the happiest of New Year's. Blessed prosperity and health and peace and goodwill and spiritual strength and love and joy and meaning for all of you, my dear friends and listeners and my friends on the board. As much love as my heart can hold. And until next week, tune back in. God bless and bye for now.